Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Not the cast of Hamilton, but the Beastie Boys get our first sounds today on the Brian Lehrer Show. We will get to the act of Hamilton speaking back to Donald Trump's worldview when Mike Pence went to see the show on Friday night. But there was also this, since we last spoke, swastikas and the words "Go Trump" were drawn on playground equipment at Adam Yorch Park in Brooklyn Heights, prompting a demonstration by Brooklynites that included many elected officials and Ad Rock Horovitz from the Beastie Boys, Adam Yorch's group. And NYPD Commissioner James O'Neill had already said, yes, hate crimes are on the rise in the city.
There has been a lot of rhetoric, but this is New York City, and we're much better than that, and we won't tolerate these crimes. We have the best hate crime investigators in the United States of America. So if you're going to engage in behavior like this, rest assured that you'll be arrested as quickly as possible, and we'll work with our prosecutors to make sure that you're fully prosecuted under the hate crime statutes.
So let's start right out with our first guest after Commissioner O'Neill, and it is Senator Kirsten Gillibrand on the daunting job of representing New York State and New York values in the Senate in the coming age of Donald Trump. Senator, we appreciate you coming on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. I'm delighted to be on.
And can I start by asking what you would say first to New Yorkers who are afraid after what happened in Brooklyn Heights is just one example. NYPD commissioner saying what he said there. Reince Priebus went on television yesterday and said aspects of Islam itself, not just groups like ISIS, are problematic. A KKK chapter in North Carolina is planning a victory rally next month because Trump was elected. This is much more than the game of politics right now for so many people in our diverse state, as I know you know.
Well, the first thing I would say to your listeners is to not be afraid. This is something we will overcome. This is not who we are as a country. I will speak out. We should all speak out. We will win this, and we will push back hate in our country, in our state. And it is horrible what's happening, Brian, around the state. I'm headed to upstate New York tomorrow to Buffalo, where we've seen hate crimes in Buffalo. We've seen hate crimes in Rochester. We've seen hate crimes across upstate New York. We've seen swastikas. We've seen KKK. It's very alarming. But for listeners, we do not need to be afraid of this. We are going to fight and push back, and we are going to show who we are as a nation, regardless of who the president is and regardless of who he appoints. We are going to show what this country is made of, and that's standing up for what we believe in.
It's going around social media that you're encouraging people to call your office for a concerned citizens tally about Trump appointee Steve Bannon, because of his empowerment of white nationalist and misogynistic hate speech when he ran Breitbart News. Are you doing something like that?
Well, we've received a lot of calls, and I want my constituents to continue to call me, to reach out, to tell me what their priorities are. And I got to tell you, we've had hundreds of calls, and I've written each caller a personal letter that we – not only do I share their concerns about – all of the hate that's going around the state, but I have concerns about some of these appointments, and we do have to speak out on them. But I can tell you, Brian, things are changing, and I do believe this is a wake-up call for all New Yorkers and all those who care about human rights and civil rights and fighting against all signs of hate, whether it's anti-Semitic, whether it's bigoted, whether it's racist, whether it's sexist, whether it's anti-LGBT. And so we have to use our voices, and we have to use our voices in all places, and we have to demand the respect and the kind of country that this country was founded on.
How? And I read that there's something that you would do with this tally, if there is a tally, once you have it, some kind of additional statement that you would make that's somehow more formal than what you just said.
Well, I plan to do a speech tomorrow in Rochester, and I'm going to talk about how many constituents I've heard about. But for me, my relationship with the constituents in the state, I represent them, and I want to hear from them because not only does it empower me to speak louder, stronger, more forcefully on the issues they care about, but then I can talk about what's happening in my state. Because sometimes my colleagues here, you know, they're from different places. They don't necessarily aren't in tune with what's happening around the country. And so when I can use real examples of how people are afraid and what's going on in their lives. I mean, I had a call from a woman who was in the grocery store with her daughter, and she had a headscarf on, and she was being literally intimidated and harassed in the grocery store. You know, threatening remarks from other shoppers. I mean, that's not acceptable. And so we have to, I want to use those examples and use them so that our leaders and President-elect Trump and those he appoints can understand they have a role here. They have to protect the rights of these citizens and really push back on maybe their view of the world and that they don't see this as an issue.
And listeners, your questions are welcome for Senator Gillibrand at 212-433-WNYC. 433-9692 on how to represent New York in the Senate in the age of Donald Trump and a Republican Congress, by the way. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. The website Bustle says you've already called on Trump to fire Bannon. Have you done that?
Yes. In fact, I immediately tweeted that I thought there was no place in the White House for someone who is leading the alt-right movement. And I'm very concerned about anyone who is known to or believed to promote bigotry, racism, sexism, anti-Semitism, and anti-Muslim sentiments. And so I just, you know, we don't have a role in confirming Bannon or not, but I do think people need to hold him accountable, and that means speaking out and being aggressive and watching what he does in that role.
Bannon did an interview with The Hollywood Reporter the other day and said a few things, maybe intended to assuage people's fears or clarify his positions on some things. He said he's not a white nationalist, he's an economic nationalist. And he said, quote, like Andrew Jackson's populism, we're going to build an entirely new political movement. It's everything related to jobs. The conservatives are going to go crazy. I'm the guy pushing a $1 trillion infrastructure plan. With negative interest rates through the world, it's the greatest opportunity to rebuild everywhere. So how do you take all that? Is Bannon and therefore Trump more complicated than some want to give them credit for?
Well, we don't know, but what I do know, if he believes in rebuilding our economy, I'm going to keep his feet to the fire on passing a national paid leave program and make sure he cares about things that affect structural reform, whether it's equal pay for equal work or affordable daycare or universal pre-K, so that everyone in the workplace can reach their full economic potential. So if he's open to creating economic growth, then I'm going to give him a lot of good ideas about how to do that.
Senator Schumer, who of course will not just be your fellow senator from New York, but the Senate Democratic leader, was on some of the Sunday talk shows yesterday and seemed very willing to work with Trump. I want to play a soundbite of Senator Schumer with Chris Wallace on Fox News Sunday.
Surprisingly, on several different issues, Donald Trump and his campaign echoed the views of Democrats, not Republicans. Massive transportation bill, trade, getting rid of the carried interest loophole, cleaning up the swamp. And on those issues where he agrees with us and the Republican establishment and hard right doesn't, we challenge him. Work with us and keep your promises to blue-collar America. I think blue-collar America voted for Donald Trump more on Democratic issues than on Republican issues, which he professed. And we will work with him on those issues.
Rework NAFTA?
Absolutely.
Kill the Pacific Trade Partnership, which seems like it's
gone already, but I'm glad it is. I opposed it.
Paid maternity leave.
We should work out something that's strong and good, but I'm open to it.
After which, Chris Wallace said, kumbaya, Senator Schumer on Fox News Sunday. So, Senator Gillibrand, are you on the same page in terms of working with Trump as hard as you can on places where his agenda is in sync with the Democrats?
Well, I'm skeptical of Trump, and I think he needs to do a lot more to extend a hand to the rest of the nation before he deserves the benefit of the doubt. He did mention things in his campaign that I'm interested in pursuing, but his plans at the time weren't very good. So, for example, his daughter gave a very strong speech about the importance of a national paid leave program, but the actual proposal was only for women. So that's not adequate. You need to have a gender-neutral plan that addresses all families, for all family events. So that's the kind of thing, yes, he said it, but I don't know what he meant. And so I'm not sure how to handle that. And when he appoints people like Bannon, you have an enormous question in your mind. Does he mean that he really does want to work on these things together? So I'm skeptical, but I will, of course, try. And when he tries to subvert any rights that we have fought our lives for, whether it's women's rights or LGBT rights or civil rights, we will fight very hard. And I'm prepared to fight tooth and nail on these things.
You know, there's concern in some progressive circles about trying to compartmentalize like that. They say Trump is such a potential threat to women and Muslims and people of color that Democrats shouldn't normalize him. You've heard that word, normalize, by making deals on normal policy items like infrastructure or NAFTA or maternity leave or parental leave, because it'll grow his power to do white and male nationalist things. The only moral or politically adequate response is to refuse to do business with him starting today, the argument goes. Have you seriously considered that option, thought about it?
Well, I agree that we cannot normalize him and where he has stated his goals. I mean, he is so far outside the mainstream on so many issues. And so I think the instincts of many of folks I've talked to over the last week and a half, we have to be vigilant. And his racism, his anti-Semitism, his sexism, the things that he exudes in various statements, that cannot be normalized. And we have to fight like hell on those issues specifically. Now, if he does want to work on a paid leave plan and lets me write the bill, that's a very different scenario. But we cannot give an inch on these basic civil rights and human rights. We cannot. And when he says things that are racist, sexist, or homophobic, we have to bring down an enormous hammer because it's not acceptable. And it's not acceptable for the president-elect and our future president to talk that way or to have policies that reflect that kind of worldview. And that's why every time he nominates someone who we are concerned about because they either have racist statements in their past or anti-Semitic statements in their past, it creates alarm bells for all of us because we have no place to trust him that he's going to work in a reasonable way. And so that's why fundamentally I'm skeptical. I'm not optimistic that this will work out for any of us. And I think it's going to be a very long haul of fighting and protesting and speaking out and demanding our rights and not creating an environment where we let things slide.
Did you say on paid paternal leave or parental leave, if he lets you write the bill?
Yeah, my bill's great. If he wants to support it, it's a good thing. It would make a huge difference for America.
Has he reached out to you at all?
No, he's not reached out to me. I wouldn't expect it, but we'll see.
Ahmed in Clifton, you're on WNYC with Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Hello, Ahmed.
Hi, good morning. Good morning, Senator. My question is this. To the extent that some of the more onerous things that Trump is proposing are within the purview of the executive, such as the Muslim ban, I'm a Muslim. You know, I read Korematsu yesterday very, very studiously, and, you know, there's nothing.
For people who don't know, that's the Supreme Court decision that legitimized the internment of Japanese people during the Second World War. Go ahead, Ahmed.
Which, Brian, as you're aware, was never overturned. Justice Scalia said, if you think that's not going to happen again, you're kidding yourself. I mean, what really can the legislative branch do? What can we do if these things are, you know, enacted by the executive? That's really my question, my concern.
Well, I'll fight him with every ounce of my being, and I will ask my colleagues to do the same. I will ask Americans to rise up against such hateful policies, and we have to fight. This is this. If he literally does those things, then it is the beginning of a very long war, because honestly, that is not tolerable in this country, and we should not allow it, and we should never stop talking about it, and it should flood the airwaves so that nothing else can be done.
I know that one of your, and Ahmed, thank you, I know that one of your big issues in the Senate has been fighting sexual assault with proposals for improving how it's handled in the military and on campus. Did you feel betrayed in some sense that so many Americans were willing to not see the Access Hollywood tape as disqualifying in that respect?
Well, certainly I saw it as disqualifying. Someone who's bragging about sexually assaulting women should really never be elected to be president of the United States. But I do think it created awareness, and I think we now have an opportunity to move the ball forward. I think a lot of people were very disgusted and offended, and I think that hopefully can move a larger conversation on how to reform both the Department of Defense and the Department of Education. We have big concerns about the Office of Civil Rights at the Department of Education, and we have to do much harder work to not only reform that work, but to make sure Trump doesn't give ground on what already has been accomplished. I mean, we've been working on ending sexual violence on college campuses on a bipartisan basis for the past 4 years. And if he undermines that work, it will be devastating for these students who are trying to survive and get an education and live productive lives. So I don't know the effect of what those statements had on the electorate. I don't know why more people didn't find it disqualifying. I'm not an analyst or a pundit to tell you that answer. But I know it created a national conversation that I'm now going to continue. And we are going to talk about why it's not okay to brag about sexually assaulting women and why it is not locker room talk, that it is actually criminal behavior. And so it gives us at least a reference point to have a much more forceful conversation about what's acceptable and what's not.
So here's maybe the next piece of the conversation that the nation is about to have. Senator Jeff Sessions has been nominated as Attorney General. And I wonder if you're familiar with what he said to the conservative Weekly Standard magazine after the Access Hollywood tape came out. Quote, "This was very improper language, and he's acknowledged that," he said, talking about Trump. But the reporter followed up, "But beyond the language, would you characterize the behavior described in that as sexual assault if that behavior actually took place?" Sessions said, "I don't characterize that as sexual assault." The reporter said, "So if you grab a woman by the genitals, that's not sexual assault?" And Sessions said, "I don't know. It's not clear that how that would occur," unquote. And then, you probably know this, after that interview was published, Sessions released a statement that said, "My hesitation was based solely on confusion of the contents of the 2005 tape and the hypothetical posed by the reporter, which was asked in a chaotic post-debate environment. I regret that it resulted in an inaccurate article that misrepresented my views. Of course, it is crystal clear that assault is unacceptable. I would never intentionally suggest otherwise." But when he said assault is unacceptable, I would never intentionally suggest otherwise, even then, Sessions did not say that that particular behavior is sexual assault, according to him. So I'm embarrassed to even be saying these things in a question. But as a leader on this issue, how will this inform your assessment of whether to vote for confirmation?
Well, I have very grave concerns about Senator Sessions as the head of the Department of Justice. And I will, of course, pay attention to his hearings, and I, of course, will give him the opportunity to speak out about what kind of head of the department he's going to be. But I have to say, those comments are so offensive and so dangerous. And if he doesn't understand the basics of what sexual assault is, I don't know how he can be attorney general. Because honestly, that's one of the attorney general's jobs. The attorney general of the Department of Justice has to focus on a lot of these cases. In fact, whether you're talking about the military, the DOJ has jurisdiction in cases where you have dual jurisdiction. And in, like, both military military and civilian. And in fact, the DOJ has to help the Office of Civil Rights for the Department of Education on these cases. So he has a real role, and if he doesn't understand the basic tenets of what a sexual assault is, I don't think he has the background and knowledge that he will need to be Attorney General.
Mike in Hell's Kitchen, you're on WNYC with Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Hi, Mike.
Hi, good morning, Brian. Good morning, Senator. Thanks for taking my call. So I really appreciate the Senator's articulation with the frustration the rest of the country has for the President-elect. I wanted to ask the Senator, how does she feel about the institutionalized cronyism that has really transcended both parties? I feel like the Democratic Party in particular is really disconnected with the people on the ground. We have had countless officials indicted, including Democratic officials. Sorry, I'm getting a little nervous. And I wanted to know how the Senator would deal with institutionalized cronyism that really removes the legislators from the people that they represent.
Well, I have to say, Well, I have to say that I very strongly share your concerns. We've seen huge problems around the country in our own state. I think what Donald Trump's doing with nepotism is very, very problematic, especially given that his family have financial entanglements on the meetings he's been taking. I mean, it's really very concerning that we have a president who's bringing family members who have business interests into meetings that are government meetings, that are about government, about whether it's trade, about whether it's national security. It's wrong, and it has to change. And by the time he's sworn in, he better sort that out, because it's not acceptable, and it's a violation of the law. So I share your worries. We need, you know, at the end of the day.
But his worries weren't just about Trump. He was asking about the Democratic Party as well as the Republican Party, and, you know, this feeling on the part of a lot of voters that one of the reasons they chose Trump was to, quote unquote, drain the swamp.
We do need to drain the swamp, and I got to tell you, Washington is broken, and too many people are not here for the right reasons, and that's beyond cronyism. But in terms of my job here in the Senate, one of the first bills I passed was, and you won't believe this was actually the law, but members of Congress were immune from insider trading. They actually were allowed to take non-public information, trade on it, and make money. And so I worked with Susan Collins and others to pass the Stock Act, which bans it, and as a way to begin to do more ethics reform here in the U.S. Senate. But I share the caller's concerns. I mean, we have too many headlines around the state, and it's very frustrating. We need accountability. We need transparency. We also need a new generation of people to run for office. We need more transparency, and we need more people. And that's one of the reasons why I founded my political action committee off the sidelines, to actually ask more people to run, get more diversity, ask more women to run. And so I try, and my role is just to lead by example as best I can. I publish my taxes online. I publish my financial disclosure online. I have this thing called the Sunlight Report, where I post all my public meetings online, so that, for example, if I'm meeting with an interest group that you hate or don't like, you can not only call up and say, you know, if they got a meeting, I need a meeting. And I think that's a good lens for people to be able to look through to say, I will have my chance to speak my mind. So that's what I try to do. But I share your worries and concerns. We do need better leaders. We need more young people to go into government. And fundamentally, we need to get money out of politics. The biggest thing I can accomplish in my lifetime is get money out of politics. If we could have publicly funded elections, both statewide and federally, I promise you it would change outcomes. Because a lot of good people that I wish were running for office don't run because they hate the negative ads, they hate the nasty playing field, and they say, I would never do that to my family, so they don't run. It's one of the main reasons women don't run for office. And if you could get all that money out of politics, you would have less negative ads. You would have less millions of dollars going in by corporations that are entirely non-disclosed. So let's just say a company doesn't like a candidate's pro-environment stance. They might run millions of dollars of negative ads and never tell people, oh, and by the way, we're from the oil industry and we just don't like her pro-environment stance, but we're going to crush her and run these negative ads because we don't want her elected. That happens all the time. So it's a big problem, but we need a better players list, and we need more diversity, and we need money out of politics, and we need more transparency and accountability, and that's the kind of work I'm going to do where I am to try to change that feeling that you have that the best among us are not in public service.
I know you got to go in a minute. Some people are already naming you as the next first woman president. Do you see yourself as a potential candidate in 2020?
No, I am very focused on running for the Senate in 2018, and I really value and appreciate what I get to do as a U.S. Senator. I feel like it is a blessing that I get to serve and speak out on these issues, and so I'm going to do that.
New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We continue.